I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the 10 most endangered Indiana places in terms of historic preservation. We'll discuss the challenges of maintaining those spots, linking the Hoosier past to the Hoosier present. My guests are Marsh Davis, president of Indiana Landmarks, Sarah Halter, executive director of the Indiana Medical History Museum, and April Fisher, Cumberland town manager. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about historic preservation today on No Limits. We've got several news hooks for the conversation, including the release of the 10 most endangered historic preservation sites in Indiana. And a specific case with the German church that actually gives German Church Road its name. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Marsh Davis, who is the president of Indiana Landmarks, Sarah Halter, who is executive director of the Indiana Medical History Museum, which was a previous 10 most endangered site, and April Fisher, who is the Cumberland town manager and is here to talk about the German church. So since that seems to be the one that is the most immediate threat here, April, could you talk a little bit about where things are with the German church?
Well, last year we got a deal. A developer made an offer on the church as well as the property. It's about 5 acres. And they made the deal with the Congregation of St. John. It is for $1.5 million total. It is dependent on housing tax credits. They applied for the housing tax credits, and for the first time ever, the Indiana Housing Community Development Association started a wait list. So they usually fund about 21 projects. This year they've funded 15 projects instead and put 6 projects on the wait list. The German church was one of those projects. We are trying to extend the deal so that way we can wait until hopefully September we know something about the wait list. If we are not taken off the wait list in September, the developer does intend to reapply. So we are now looking at a small funding gap of about $75,000. And we are trying to raise that money in the meantime so that the deal can continue for another year. Indiana Landmarks has been wonderful working with us on this. They have committed $25,000 to that funding gap, and they are also hosting a fund on their website so people can donate.
So of that, when you say there's a $75,000 funding gap, is that $75,000 in addition to the $25,000 from Indiana Landmarks, or is it $75,000 minus the $25,000?
$75,000 minus. So we're looking to fill $50,000.
So you got a $50,000 hole to fill. What happens if that hole doesn't get filled?
If that hole isn't filled, then the congregation has indicated that they do not intend to renew the deal with the developer, and they intend to at some point demolish because they've been told that the property is more marketable to sellers if the church is not there, if the structure is not there, because a developer or buyer would want to come in and not have to face the publicity of tearing down the structure.
So let me ask, how old is this church, by the way? Is it?
It's over 100 years old. I do not know the exact number.
Marsh, do you? Since this is your line of work, how old? What's the pedigree of the church?
Yes, the structure itself dates from the early 20th century, but this is not the first church at that site. There was a church predecessor that actually. That's where the name German Church comes from. It was had a German name, which I will not attempt to pronounce. But so this is a successor, either second or third building at that site. So there's been a long, long history mm-hmm. of a church being at that site. And there's also a cemetery associated with it.
And so if this deal, and I guess this sort of takes us into, and what's the timetable here? I mean, when do we have to make this happen, this gap get closed, April?
Our deadline is this Thursday, May 4th.
Oh, so you need to raise $50,000 in the next 2 days.
Yes. We already have a little bit of that. We're needing about $30,000 now.
$30,000. Well, this is probably the time if people do want to contribute. How do they go about doing that? Is there a fund set up?
Yes, Indiana Landmarks is hosting that on their website. It's indianalandmarks.org/donate. You just donate like you would donate to Indiana Landmarks, but in the comment you put German Church, and they will put all that money aside for German Church. This okay. is easier than a GoFundMe page because GoFundMe keeps 7%. Mm-hmm. If we're not successful, Indiana Landmarks intends to refund all of the donations. GoFundMe would not do that. Also, a donation to Indiana Landmarks is tax deductible.
Okay. And in terms of May 4th, and do you start over, or does the building just get demolished at that point? Or?
At that time, the developer will go back to the congregation and see how much, if $75,000 is really their bottom dollar, which I've been told it is, or see if there's some other way they can negotiate this. But from what I have been told, this is it. And to the congregation's credit, they have been sitting on this building for some time now. It was about almost a year ago that the initial deal was made. This would ask them to be sitting on it for another year. And then there was time before that as well. So they've been looking to sell the building and use the proceeds to build a new church. They're just not a big enough congregation for the current building, and they can't keep it up because of the maintenance.
How common is this story, Marsh, where we see buildings like this that have special places in communities that in some ways define them?
Well, it's very common. This one in particular has a special significance because of the name identity, but also its placement. If you're familiar with that stretch of East Washington Street, it's in an area that was once a small town. Cumberland is just to the east. To the west is a vast expanse of what we might call commercial sprawl. Mm-hmm. And so this property itself has an added significance because of the contrast that provides with so much of the landscape around it. It really is a point of great dignity and beauty, if I might add, at a point which is maybe challenged in some of those areas as we head into the commercial areas to the west. So in general, yes, this is a very common issue that we face with special places that have either outgrown or the perhaps the users of the facility have shrunk in the case of this congregation, and so it puts a challenge to us preservationists to find a new and viable use. This is really the key challenge that we face. Is it technically feasible? Of course. Is mm-hmm. it financially feasible to save this property? Of course there is money out there. But these things, we add to that the element of time pressure and in some cases a lack of vision or lack of leadership. That's when things begin to get a little loose. And so what we try to do at Indiana Landmarks through our day-to-day work and through the list of 10 most endangered places that mm-hmm. we'll discuss shortly is not to say, gee, this is a horrible thing that's happening. We've got to stop this. No, what we try to do is bring resources to bear. We have a motto that we like to use. That is, be a part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do, to find a solution to these problems, be they economic, architectural, political. There are solutions. We just have to find them.
So that is a good segue, actually, to the 10 most endangered sites list here. Could you talk about who is on that list this year?
Yes.
Okay.
Where do you want to
start? Well, why don't we start at the top?
Okay. Well, in no particular order, because mm-hmm. they're all important. we have the Washington County Courthouse in Salem. This is one of those grand 19th century Indiana classic courthouses, really mm-hmm. treasures of our state. There was a great competition among counties back in the 19th century, in particular early 20th century, built grand edifices. And we've lost a few, but not recently. The last time we had a battle over seriously losing a 19th century Indiana courthouse was in Randolph County. And it took a group of elderly women to basically strip of their clothing and pose for a fundraising calendar and awareness building that electrified the town, and they got the job done, and the Randolph County Courthouse has been saved and restored. Now, we hoped not to have to go to that trouble in Salem, but in this case, it's a building that has some maintenance needs and some structural stability issues that need to be addressed. And there's also the threat of the courts being relocated from that building, which means you'd have an empty building or underused building with structural deficiencies and not a use. We want to change things before it gets too bad to save. It's a spectacular building, and we cannot afford to lose another 19th century or early 20th century historic courthouse in our state.
Okay. Next on the list?
The Speakman House. This is between Rising Sun and Aurora. It's a wonderful, very evocative river house. It looks like something out of the Deep South with a big columned portico on the front overlooking the Ohio River. The house has just simply fallen into terrible disrepair, yet it's one of the most significant pre-Civil War houses that we have in Indiana. And what we're trying to do is to convince the owners of the property to work with us to find an agreeable price, and then we in turn would try to find a new owner for the property to restore it. It's in very fragile condition, but it is one of the most important houses that we have in our state.
Okay. And I'm watching you while this is going on. You were on this list. Your building was. What was that experience like?
Well, I think our case was a little different than most. We weren't threatened with demolition. This was 2015. We were severely threatened by water damage and deterioration. We had a lot of structural issues. We had done an assessment of the building top to bottom, inside and out, the previous fall, and received a 1-inch thick binder full of things that were wrong with the building, many that we didn't even know about. And so we were excited to be on the list. It was an opportunity for us.
Which was, and what I'm assuming with that, It wasn't just the things that were wrong. It was also the price tag that came along with fixing all those things that were wrong. How large was that?
They were expensive problems, and being on the National Register of Historic Places made them even more expensive problems. We set a goal for our capital campaign of $2.2 million to fix all of these issues.
And were you able to reach that, or how far along are you?
We're still plugging away at it. We're 2 years into what we hoped would be a 5-year process, and we're just about at the 50% mark.
Okay. So you've raised around $1 million?
In grants, individual and corporate donations, pledges, and a couple of bequests. So it's not all cash in hand, but we've been able to get a lot done with it, and the building is stable. It's very nearly watertight, too.
Okay, and where the building is located, where?
We're on the grounds of what used to be Central State Hospital in the near west side of Indianapolis.
Okay.
So our building was the pathological department of the hospital.
And how old a building is it?
1896.
So we're talking about something that, by my math, is more than 120 years old.
Right.
And how long it had been since it had gotten the kind of loving attention that those old buildings require?
Far too long. I think even, it was a functioning laboratory until 1969, and I think even at that time, the hospital wasn't well-funded, and I don't think it was getting the attention it really needed. But we have a small staff, a small budget, and I think for a long time the organization was kind of intimidated by the problems. They were patching things and not really addressing bigger issues, and then we finally got to the point where we needed to fix it or we were going to risk losing it in the future.
Marsh, I know we're only two items into the list. We're going to tease these out during the hour. Don't worry, folks. We will get to the bottom of the list. But it sounds like each one of these is a different story unto itself.
That's true. Yeah, we try to have variety in what we list. In the case of the Indiana Medical History Museum, this was one where they actually wanted to be on the list. It wasn't a badge of shame, but rather, how can this list help draw attention to what they need? And so it's wonderful when this list has that opportunity to be a catalyst for fundraising and for public awareness. And I think that it was successful in the case of the Medical History Museum.
Absolutely.
We are talking about historic preservation here on No Limits today. My guests are Marsh Davis, president of Indiana Landmarks, Sarah Halter, executive director of the Indiana Medical History Museum, and April Fisher, Cumberland town manager. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881, send us an email, or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 WFYI by your membership and by Puccini's, making dough daily from bromate-free, unbleached 100% spring wheat flour with oven-roasted onion marmalade, summer sausage, and gorgonzola with fresh rosemary for the campfire pizza. Puccini's. And by Indy Film Fest, presented by Indiana State University, announcing the 8th Annual Bigger Picture Show, a silent auction event featuring works by designers and artists imagining movie posters in a whole new way. Friday, May 12th at 6:30 at 1899 in Central State Village. More at indiefilmfest.org. And by Comcast Business, committed to providing dependable internet service for businesses who depend on it. Comcast Business, Internet, Voice, and TV, built for business. If you'd like to join the conversation today on No Limits, please give us a call at 866-476-3881.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about historic preservation here on No Limits. We've got a couple of immediate news hooks. We're talking about the endangered German church that gives German Church Road its name, and the just issued list of the 10 most endangered sites in Indiana in regard to historic preservation. My guests are Marsh Davis. He's president of Indiana Landmarks. Sarah Halter. She is executive director of the Indiana Medical History Museum, which was a previous 10 most endangered site. And April Fisher, who is Cumberland town manager, who's intimately involved with and greatly concerned about the German church. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Marsh, we made it one-fifth of the way through our list of the 10 most. And to recap, they are the courthouse in Salem, Indiana, and the Speakman home.
Correct, yeah.
and also in southern Indiana. So take
right,
us to number three.
I'll step it up here a little
okay,
bit.
Well, that's okay. No, we have an hour.
Pryor's Country Place. This is a building up at Fox Lake up in far northeastern Indiana. This Fox Lake was an African-American lake community at a time when African-Americans were denied property ownership on some of the more popular lakes in Indiana. So this was their community, and it's a charming community. This particular property is on 5 acres, and it's a fine old craftsman lodge. And mm-hmm. But some people think that the property is worth more without the historic building on the site. And so we're trying to find a buyer for that property that would appreciate the value, not just of the real estate, but of the history of that community.
How do you, in terms of this, determine that a site is of sufficient historic importance that it deserves to be on the list or it deserves to be preserved?
Well, again, we strive for variety, so there are so many different factors that we take in. Obviously, we want a place that has some historical interest and significance, some more than others, and sometimes it's more of an architectural or an aesthetic importance to a place, but usually it's a combination of those, and then it also involves a level of public consciousness, if you will. We've been talking about the German Church or the St. John United Church of Christ. That's a property, though it's not on our 10 list this year. That's a place that has elicited great community interest. So that's an important factor as well. We're not doing this in isolation.
We are talking about historic preservation here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, first I want to give a shout out to Marsh Davis and all of Indiana Landmarks, and in particular Mark DeLossi. The Rively Theater, which I am the board president of, was on the most endangered list 2 years in a row, and this group has gone above and beyond help, advice, just moral support. So when you are on that list, it brings attention not only through the media, but in our case, we needed some legal, we had some legal hurdles to jump. We had structural problems. We had literally a collapsing roof. Currently, we are just about ready to start construction on the final 20% of the roof. Without this group, we would have a parking lot or a gravel lot. People don't realize the amount of tax that a large building can bring in. And in the Rively's situation, to redevelop this whole neighborhood, to give it ownership of something that is fun and people can enjoy daily. So great job, guys.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing your story, Jim.
Thank you.
Certainly. April, that spurs, because what he's really talking about here is the impact and the sense of identity that these places give to communities. What will the impact be on your community if that church is demolished?
It will be great. As Marsh said, it really acts as that dividing line between, you know, what we know as sprawl and what we mm-hmm. see as a smaller town. It is our western gateway. Mm-hmm. It sits at the very western edge of our town. And when people hit that church, when they see it, they can see that it's a different area, and that's the start of Cumberland. It's also where our streetscape starts. We were the first town in Indiana to do a comprehensive streetscape with NDOT. So we've really tried to make sure that Cumberland, with that church, with our streetscape, with other things we do, we try to make sure we have our identity. But so much of that is wrapped up in that building and wrapped up in that church.
Marsh, is that part of the calculation that goes into the most endangered sites, too, is what the impact is going to be either to a community's identity or even the states in this case? I mean, you've talked about some intriguing parts already of Indiana's history with the three buildings that are on the list that we've talked about so far. How big a part is that of the calculation that you make?
Well, it's a huge part, and it can be both a positive and a negative thing. You think, what would it be like without that mm-hmm. place there? But what we tend to look at is what if this were revitalized? And if we look at our list over time, we've been doing this since, I think, 1991. Mm-hmm. A lot of the places have been the sparks for community revitalization. So it's not just what would the absence bring, but what can this do to make a community a better, more livable place, to bring people and commerce to an area that may have been neglected, or to save something of beauty that draws attention to a community. These are all very important things. But if I could just mention something that
sure.
your caller, Jim, mentioned. The Rively is a long-standing mm-hmm. project. And what we try to tell people with the list that we create, and not just this year but in all the years past, that we're in this for the long haul. These are not easily solved mm-hmm. Projects. If these were easy to solve, somebody else would be doing them. So mm-hmm. that's why they're on our plate. And some of them will be with us for a very long time before we find a solution. If I could just give one example of a
sure.
really outstanding place here in Indianapolis that was on our list years back, the old School 97 on East 10th Street, just to the west of Woodruff Place.
Mm-hmm.
This was a school built in the 1930s for disabled children, a landmark way ahead of its time. Well, this was on the bubble for so long, and we staved off the demolition, working with IPS to find a positive solution, that they didn't need that site for parking. We were able to show that to them, and we kept it from being demolished. But the building stood there for year after year after year, and now, 10 years after the most recent rescue of that property, it is going to be redeveloped into housing by a wonderful mm-hmm. development company called Core Redevelopment, and it will be turned into a housing facility, which is fantastic. But these things take a long time to solve sometimes.
Well, Sarah, I mean, you're in the middle of a five-year campaign to get this done. I want to get at, though, the sort of cost of this, not in dollar terms, but in you know, human terms. What would it have meant to your organization if you'd had to abandon that building?
Well, I mean, it's part of our identity. You know, the building is a 19th century laboratory that it, you know, it survives almost intact with original furnishings and equipment and specimens and records, even chemicals. And so without the building, our collection means a lot less. It's not like we could just move somewhere else and have the same thing. And it's such an incredibly unique thing. A lot of historic sites and house museums don't have their original collection, and you can't recreate that once it's lost.
We are talking about historic preservation here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Marsh, we're at number four now.
Where did I leave? Okay. One of the entries on this year's list was actually one from a long time ago, and that's Simpson Hall out at the Indiana School for the Deaf. This building was built in 1911, part of a grand campus. It's been in disrepair for at least two decades, but there's a new interest among developers who could take on that property and save it, again, turning it into a housing facility. When I say facility, I mean apartments, not an institution of sorts. So our issue there is to try to convince the state that a private development can coexist with a public institution at that site. We believe it can, and we believe it's financially feasible and technically feasible to do so. And so we're working in a dialogue now to explore that possibility.
There's a listener who preferred not to go on the air who called in and commented that it seems empty Christian churches have a tendency to garner preservation backing. But what if a religious building comes from a different background? How is the value of preservation determined if the faith behind the building isn't mainstream? Marsha, I think that one's thrown in your direction, sadly.
It's an interesting question. We are very ecumenical at Indiana Landmarks, and the whole preservation movement is very, very attuned to diversity and other cultures and religions. In fact, one of the projects that we have on our long-term list, and this is not on this list, but something that we'll be dealing with for, I would guess, many years to come, is the former Bethel Temple at 34th and Ruckel here in Indianapolis. We own it, and we have put money in to save it, and we're trying to find a solution for this Jewish temple, former Jewish temple, that had fallen into horrible disrepair. And we don't have an end user for it, but we're committed to saving it. It's such an important part of the cultural history of our state that we've taken that commitment. If you want to look at another former 10 most listing that might be a little bit out of the mainstream of religion, was the Camp Chesterfield, which is a spiritualist camp outside of Anderson. That's not exactly mainstream religion, but we were very committed to helping them save the historic resources at that site. So I guess clearly in Indiana, our cities and towns are populated with a greater number of mainstream religious buildings than others. But we certainly make no exception for those other religions. In fact, we're working to preserve a historic synagogue up in Ligonier, which had a tremendous Jewish heritage, which is, I don't believe there's any Jewish population there left, but there's wonderful resources, and we're committed to preserving them.
How many properties around the state, buildings or sites, does Indiana Landmarks keep track of? Or is that a figure you don't even want to think about?
I really can't. It's a huge number because we have Indiana Landmarks is a statewide organization, and we have 9 offices around the state. We have very talented people that work out of these offices, and they know their communities and their counties very well. Some of them cover 4 counties, some of them cover 16 counties, but they know these towns and these. So I can't even hazard a guess how many properties our people are working on a daily basis. If we put it together, it'd be a huge number.
So we probably ought to, if we're going to make it through the list here, we probably ought to go back. We're at number 5.
Okay. Number 5, the old Fire Station 18 in Indianapolis. This is an Art Moderne style designed by famous architects Pierre and Wright. It's fallen into disuse. It's at the site. It's very close to the Indiana Medical History Museum, and we want to save it rather than see it turned into a gas station or convenience store.
Sarah, your eyes popped up on that one. You have an interest in that.
Oh, it's right on the border of the former hospital grounds. It is very close to us. I grew up on the Near West Side, and I've been working on the former grounds for 10 years now, so I drive by it every day, and I've watched it deteriorate over the years. The building was abandoned about the time that the hospital closed, and it's been vandalized and neglected and graffitied ever since then. And so, we were afraid that we would lose it, and we'd love to see it saved with its historic integrity intact. And it would be great to see it used in some way that benefits the community.
Okay. We should probably get to number 6 here real quickly.
The old Marquette School in South Bend. This is just one of those classic, I think, 1930s collegiate Gothic schools that was replaced by a modern school. It stands vacant. We think it would make an outstanding redevelopment project, and our goal is to help bring people to the table who can find a solution to make that happen.
We are talking about historic preservation here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Leslie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Oops, looks like the phone lines have frozen on me. We will come back to, let me see if I can get Leslie. Leslie, are you with us?
I am.
Great. Oops. We just lost Leslie. We will try to get her back in a moment. In the meantime, Marsh, how about if we move to the next one on the list?
Okay. Marion National Bank in downtown Marion. This is one of those classic, really tall, terracotta-clad buildings. So you think of the classic bank building with the ornate lobby. And this has fallen into disuse. The upper stories have been vacant for a long time. The owner is not maintaining it adequately with a leaking roof. You begin to have all sorts of problems, and even some of the terracotta detailing on the outside has begun to fall off the building. This needs immediate attention. It needs new investment, new ownership, and we hope to attract that.
So, April, I'm going to ask you, because we're talking about these places, and I'm not going to try to offend Marsh here, but and those of us of a certain vintage remember when developers would refer to historic preservationists as hysteric preservationists and the mindless. Are there voices in your community who are saying, you know, no, just knock the thing down? It can be used better. Or is the community pretty well lined up behind preserving the church?
The community is pretty lined up behind preserving the church. There are some voices, of course. There's also always going to be those voices, but I think the majority of us see the value in preserving old architecture and old buildings and that they can be useful.
Do you still hear that, Marsh, in the work that you're doing? I mean, as you know, that was quite the pushback in the 70s, 80s, maybe even into the early 90s.
Oh, I suppose a little bit, but I think preservation has proven itself to be a major force for revitalization. And as when people take time to understand what we're trying to do, and that is not to be hysterical, but to as I mentioned earlier, to come to the table with solutions and try to solve problems and make things better, as opposed to just stopping things. I think when people understand that they'll get over that notion very quickly. There are some who, of course, I suppose, don't have much use for things from the past, but we're all about the present and the future, making places better for ourselves and for our children and generations in the future to live and do business.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about historic preservation. We're partway through the list of the 10 most endangered historic preservation sites in Indiana. We will get that list completed before the show is over, I promise. My guests are Marsh Davis. He is president of Indiana Landmarks. Sarah Halter, who is executive director of the Indiana Medical History Museum, which was a previous 10 most endangered site. And she's also a champion of, we just learned, of the old Fire Station 18, which is on the new list. And April Fisher, who is Cumberland Town Manager and is the defender of the German Church that gives German Church Road its name. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about historic preservation today on No Limits. My guests are Marsh Davis. He's president of Indiana Landmarks. Sarah Halter, who is executive director of the Indiana Medical History Museum, which was a previous 10 most endangered site in terms of historic preservation. And April Fisher, Cumberland Town Manager, who is talking about the endangered German church that gives German Church Road its name. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Leslie has done, and we appreciate her persistence in calling us back at 866-476-3881. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you. I really appreciate this show. My husband and I do antique restorations in Brownsburg, and we have since the early 70s, and preservation of our older buildings in Indianapolis is one of the things that makes Indianapolis so charming. We've traveled a lot, and we literally seek out places that have preserved their heritage and understand the history of craftsmanship that it takes to make some of these buildings, like, say, the Antonium and the Amurat Temple, and also the German church church on German Church Road. It's amazing craftsmanship that you can't find really anymore, and it deserves to be preserved.
Thank you very much for the call and the comment, Leslie, and thank you for being persistent in calling us.
You're welcome.
Thanks. So, April, I saw you nodding your head while Leslie was talking. And I'm going to ask this of all three. What is it, and I'm not excluding myself from this, what is it about these old places or that speaks to us so powerfully? Because, you know, your body language then was one of complete affirmation. So,
yes. She's right. It does give Indianapolis its charm. When I was in college and my first year of law school, I interned for Community Development Corporation, Riley Area Development. They did work in the northeast quadrant of Indianapolis, a lot of work along Mass Avenue. And at the time they started, it was not a booming area. Mm-hmm. But I was just down there the other day and looking around at the charming buildings and thinking, you know, had we as a society not saved these buildings, that area would not be so charming. It would not be so wonderful. It would just be another building, you know, that you see. J.W. Marriott's a great building, and it's a great piece of architecture, but it doesn't have the character that those old buildings have, and it doesn't have our sense of history that those old buildings have. And I think that's what makes places like Mass Ave and Broad Ripple and Irvington very popular places.
Sarah, your thoughts. Why do they speak to you so powerfully?
Well, I certainly think they're more interesting, but I think they can also be places that bring people together. Different kinds of people coming together with a shared history and a sense of community, and I think embracing that is pretty powerful.
Marsh, I'm going to give you the last word on this subject, then we're going to plunge back into the list real quickly.
Well, there are so many qualities. Some of it is just the way the historic buildings tend to have a more organic sense about them. If we're still talking about Massachusetts Avenue, I think most of your listeners are familiar with that.
Yeah.
Compare that, say, to You know, Indianapolis had the four diagonal streets. Compare Mass Avenue to, say, Indiana Avenue, which once was a vibrant community that was full of historic properties, most of which have been lost. And you look at the vitality along Mass Avenue, where the people want to be. They want to congregate with these old buildings mixed in with the new construction, this kind of organic growth of an area. And then you see where there's been widespread destruction and a lot of infill, but the balance has been tipped more toward new construction, which doesn't have the same feel. So that's one. It's not really an answer, but it's an example of two places, once very very similar in physical characteristics and in their proximity to the city, who've taken entirely different directions. And one is extremely popular for pedestrian traffic and commerce and residential living, and the other is not. But if I could just, again, to address something that Leslie said about the desire to visit these places, this is something that we in the preservation business have been really promoting all along, is that it's good for business, preservation. Mm-hmm. It's not just for aesthetics. It's not just for people who like to ponder the past. This is good business for communities, for neighborhoods. And that's why cities beginning in the 1930s began to enact ordinances to help protect their historic places, because they know that back in Charleston and New Orleans, the pioneers and that, the people, tourists with money, want to come there and visit and spend their dollars.
Mm-hmm. So I promised anyway that we would get through this list. So, yes.
The old YMCA in Terre Haute. This was built in 1939, one of those great multifunctional built urban YMCAs. It, like a lot of urban buildings over the course of time, fell into disrepair and was left by the YMCA in 2006. And basically it's falling into disrepair further, and it needs a new owner. It's just ripe for redevelopment. And again, you've seen that in a lot of these, where the challenge is bringing new owners and developers to repurpose these buildings. That's what it needs.
Okay. Next one.
The Newkirk Mansion in Connersville. This is a toughie. This is a spectacular 1880 Victorian extravaganza, a mansion very beautifully appointed. Over the course of time, it also took on different uses. It became cut into apartments, and then later was a nursing home from the 1960s, and now stands abandoned. It's going to be a challenge because it's a very large house that needs a lot of work, and it's in a depressed real estate environment. And further, a fire just last week destroyed the carriage house behind this mansion, which was quite a nice feature in its own right. So it's highly, highly endangered, very fragile. We need to find a new owner who's willing to invest in it. And it's going to be a very special person to appreciate the qualities of that house and to invest in it, to save it.
And then we probably will do one more, and then I've got, I want to get a call in.
Okay. I got just one more.
One more?
One
okay.
more. This is a group listing. Sometimes we don't just list a single site, but do a whole bunch. And this is round and polygonal barns.
Okay.
And these barns they're kind of an oddity on the landscape. We had at one time over 200 of them. There's dwindled to far less than 100 today. There's a lot of mythology about round barns and polygonal barns, but essentially, most of the ones we have date from the very late 9th, early late 19th, or early 20th century, and they were designed to be highly efficient in an era then of modern agriculture. Farming in those days was highly diversified, and so the barns reflected the diversity of the family farm. You'd have within one building many uses. You had hay storage, grain storage, animal feeding stations, places for tractors. The round barn was a designed building to accommodate all those needs under one massive structure. And these were designed not by folk builders, but rather by architects, engineers, and some of the land-grant colleges that had agricultural schools.
We are talking about historic preservation here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm appreciating the program. today, Latin. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
As John, I think, was just talking, one of my thoughts is, what is the criteria, or, I mean, I understand there's probably a difficulty in creating that or identifying a property as a historic property, and the difference between maintaining the aesthetic and the architecture versus the cultural use and significance. And I have that question overlaid upon three properties. One, the Bethel AME Church on the canal downtown. And as John was referencing, the Madam C.J. Walker being the last on the Indiana Avenue street. And then I have a more personal one. There's a fraternity house in Indiana University that was built in 1911 by the fraternity Kappa Alpha Psi, the only predominantly black fraternity founded in Indiana in 1911 that has kind of been repurposed. And I think it has a placard and there's been some identification, but just that question of how do you measure, you know, when you repurpose or you find people to use these spaces, you know, maintaining aesthetic or maintaining the cultural significance with those things.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Stephen Marsh, I think this one's going to go to you.
How many hours do we have? We got to just a few minutes. Great question, really, and something that we take to heart. I'll try to – I can't get into all the qualifiers that mm-hmm. one uses to determine what's the same, but at least two of the examples. You mentioned the Walker Theater. This is regarded as one of our, not just our state's, but one of our nation's most important historic sites. This carries the banner of National Historic Landmark, and I think there are only 42 of these in Indiana of all the thousands of historic properties. Only 42 reached to that level. So the Walker Theater is precious in many respects. It is not as protected as one might think from change, and this is something that we are moderately concerned about because it is such an extraordinary property, both inside and out. But clearly, no lack of recognition for that. The case of Bethel AME, another, I would say, one of the very, very most significant African-American landmarks in our state, is a very challenging situation. It's not entirely unlike what's happening out in Cumberland with the St. John United Church of Christ. The congregation declined to the point that they could not maintain the building, and it was falling into disrepair. They found a buyer to take them out of that investment, and the buyer was going to demolish all but the front of the building for it to turn it into a hotel, the whole site converted into a hotel, preserving the tower and the facade. Well, we have a very active African-American Landmarks Committee at Indiana mm-hmm. Landmarks who stepped up immediately to meet with the developer. And we said, under no circumstances can we afford to lose that building. We know we can't save the church. That's the congregation's choice. That was their choice to leave, and we don't oppose their plans. But you must, by all means possible, preserve the exterior, the entire exterior of Bethel AME for the benefit of the public in the future to know that this was the site of one of the most important African-American congregations in our state. And we have had very successful meetings with the developer who saw the value to it and has plans now to retain the entire shell of that building. Again, we can't save the congregation's place in that. That's not our role, but we have been able to come to a plan that will help protect that landmark.
This could be a quick one. It's coming to you as well, Marsh. This is from a listener named Jeff, who sent it to us via email. You can find us on email at nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, great subject. The Mills House, of which Harry Cooler is credited as the architect, was on the list of Indiana's most endangered. To my knowledge, it is still in an awful state of disrepair with an unmotivated owner. Is there any news for this property? Marsh?
Regretfully, no. This is one of the common issues that we have, where we have a property owner who, for whatever reason, may or may not appreciate the property, but also has an inflated sense of value of the property. And we can't come to anything reasonable in terms of a negotiation for purchase.
And another one, this might be April and Marsh both could answer this one. This comes via Twitter, and again, you can find us on Twitter at WFYI, from listeners named Molly and Tom. Says, given costs, do historic preservation projects always require grant funds or tax relief to make the work financially feasible?
Unfortunately, a lot of times, yes. That's the great thing about the programs that fund those home fund programs, CDBG programs, a lot of these old buildings, because of the state of disrepair, because of the price that it would take, they're not exactly profitable. So the government provides, you know, grant money through home funds and CDBG funds, community development block grants. Those are very important programs because they help with the revitalization of buildings like these. And, you know, just like we've seen in other areas in the town, like with Mass Ave, that revitalization can turn into a revitalization for the whole area.
Maggie, welcome to the program.
I have a question. I'm a member of Indiana Landmarks, and I wonder, I look at all the sessions that you offer and things, but I never see anything that addresses being proactively educating the public about the value of historic preservation. And I know from experience in my own hometown that sometimes there's a building that a group is thinking of tearing down. They maybe have already contacted a wrecking company or something like that. And by the time Indiana Landmarks finds out, it's often very difficult to then backtrack and get people to think differently about that building. So I think we need people who believe in historic preservation inside every community, who can keep their eyes and ears open about any building that is potentially going to be endangered. And I think we have to somehow educate people in the community so that we do have those people there. I think people don't come with an automatic interest in historic preservation.
Maggie, I apologize.
What is being done to proactively educate people all over the state, in small towns and everywhere?
Maggie, so I'm going to have to cut you off because we're getting close on time, and I do want to give Marsh a chance to respond real quickly. Thank you very much for the call and the question. I'm sorry it came so late in the program.
Well, Maggie's comment is true in so many respects, because as much as we think that we're a household name and the people know and care about historic preservation, there are a lot of people out there that have never really been exposed to it. But that's what we try to do on a daily basis. That's why we have these offices around the state. We just wrapped up a very successful state preservation conference in Wabash, along with our friends at the Indiana Division of Historic Preservation and Archaeology and Indiana University, inviting elected officials to attend. This is just one of the outreach tools that we participate in. But another thing that we have over time really stressed to do is to get people organized at the local level. We have what's called our affiliate council. These are like 63 local organizations that are in some ways our eyes and ears. And the stronger we are organized locally, the more effective we can be as a statewide organization. So time is up, but I can't go into all the other ways that we reach out to the community. But it is a top priority. It's a challenge that we continue to address.
April, real quickly, the URL if people want to give money to support German church, preserving the German church.
Yes, indianalandmarks.org/donate, and make sure you write German church in the comment.
Sarah, in about 5 seconds, if they want to support your project.
You can find information about our projects and progress and how to donate at www.imhm.org.
That will be it for this discussion. I am John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.